So it's always nice to be back in this community after I left quantum information actually in 2007, but it's still kind of hobby. So thanks a lot for the invitation. Causal inference rules for algorithmic dependencies and why they reproduce the error of time. I should say that the last part only appears in the last slides. Still, I consider it important. So first of all, just as a little motivation, can we infer causal relations from passive observations? I mean, I think that's pretty obvious in this community that there's the following issue. Recent study reports a negative correlation between coffee consumption and life expectancy. However, the paradox conclusion was drinking coffee is healthy. Nevertheless, strong coffee drinkers tend to die earlier because they tend to have unhealthy habits. So this shows that the relation between statistical and causal dependencies is tricky, regardless whether this conclusion is really true, but it's a nice story. It appeared in Spiegel Online a while ago. Okay, what we know is Reichenbach's principle of common cause, which appeared in his book, The Direction of Time already, which is actually a book on theoretical physics, which already showed that this is something about physics, actually. He said, if two variables X and Y are statistically independent, then one of the following options hold at least. And in case two, Reichenbach postulated X independent Y given Z, which is probably one of the first statements on how statistical relations relate to causal statements. And of course, the distinctions between those structures is crucial in scientific reasoning. There's a more general form. Given n variables, the task is to infer the causal structure among them from n tuples that are IID drawn from the joint distribution. And then the causal structure is just formalized by a DAG, directed acyclic graph, where the arrows just mean causing in the usual sense of interventions. probably the cornerstone of causal inference is the causal Markov condition. And I show you three equivalent versions. All of them are important, I would say. The local Markov condition, which is probably one of the most famous version, states that every node is conditionally independent of its non-descendants given its parents. So here is a node, and these are the parents, and these are some non-descendants. Here are the descendants. So the parents screen off the node from its parents. The global Markov condition, without going to the details, one should say that the local Markov condition implies via semi-Grafoid axioms further independences implicitly, and the global Markov condition precisely states with which conditional independences are implied by the local one. So that gives you a graphical criterion which conditional independences should hold in the DAG. The third version is the factorization of the joint density. So the joint density factorizes according to the DAG in the sense that you have a product of the conditionals of every node given its parents. And what is crucial for this talk later is that this factorization describes mechanisms, also mechanisms maybe in a physical sense or in, at least in an abstract physical sense, in contrast to many other possible formulations that have some just a mathematical meaning. The factorization into those causal mechanisms is something physical. I mean, that's important part of the philosophy. That. Deseparate, I didn't say that. Deseparation is just a graphical criterion of, for any three sets, it tells you whether they are conditionally independent given the third one. But it says that there's some notion of whether a path is blocked by your conditioning, which basically means that you can block part, you can block a path by conditioning, but you can also open a path by conditioning, because conditioning on common effects would create dependences. That's the sophisticated part of this deseparation criterion. But the details don't matter here. We can talk about it later. Okay, so the relevance of the Markov condition is actually what I said. So the local Markov condition is probably the most intuitive form. It formalizes that every information exchange with non-descendants involves the parents. The global Markov condition is just the graphical criterion which other independences are implied. And the factorization is important because this describes the causal mechanisms. In order to justify the Markov condition, whether why a distribution should really be Markovian with respect to the true causal DAG, Pearl introduced the so-called functional model of causality, which is basically also nonlinear structural equations in terms of the traditional economical literature, for instance, or statistical literature. It just says that every node is a function of its parents and some unobserved noise term. And then you can show that, okay, that's the next step. Then you assume that all the noise terms are statistically independent, which is basically a matter of definition. Something, if you have several unobserved nodes that are dependent, then you are not allowed to consider them noise. So by construction, you are only allowed to consider variables as noise if they are independent. Okay, and then you can show that whenever you have such a model, then the three equivalent Markov conditions are satisfied. Of course, going back to this model, it's a kind of deterministic model of the world, which doesn't apply to quantum. Still, it's a good approximation for many things in real life. So at least it's an ideology that there is something deterministic underneath. Okay, the second cornerstone of independence-based causal inference is so-called causal faithfulness, which means that you prefer those DAGs for which all observed conditional independences are implied by the Markov condition. And the idea is that generic choices of parameters yield faithful distributions. Take the following simple example. For this DAG, you could in principle have X independent Y, but this would imply that the direct and indirect influence compensate, so that this direct influence would compensate the indirect one, which faithfulness principle considers unlikely and therefore rejects causal hypotheses of this kind. And so using causal Markov condition and causal faithfulness, there are several algorithms, several versions out there that infer the causal structure up to Markov equivalence classes. So up to, yeah.
So is that the same thing that Woods and Speckens called no fine-tuning?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I will later tell you some other versions of fine-tuning that are not derived from faithfulness, but it's in the same spirit then. Okay, but if you really think of causal conclusions in real life, then it's not always about statistics. For instance, you observe those two objects and you see, oh, they are quite similar. So this requires an explanation, for instance, that they come from the same factory. So similarities require an explanation. On the other hand, if you observe those two t-shirts just with this pattern of stripes, you would not necessarily guess that one company has copied the design from the other, because the pattern is so straightforward that these kind of similarities do not play a role for our causal conclusions. So similarities require an explanation only if the pattern is sufficiently complex. Another example that is closer to computer science. So let's say two persons in an experiment are instructed to write down a string with 1,000 digits. And then the result is that both write this, so all 1,000 digits coincide. What would the naive statistician conclude? He would say that there must be an agreement between the subjects. So the correlation coefficient is 1 between the digits, which is highly significant for sample size 1,000. So he rejects statistical independence and infers the existence of a causal relation. However, another mathematician would recognize that this was just the binary expansion of pi. And once recognizing this, he could also conclude that the subjects may have come up with this number independently because it just follows from a simple law. This example is supposed to show that superficially strong similarities are not necessarily significant if the pattern is too simple, which motivates that we need to measure simplicity versus complexity somehow. Okay, and you can easily imagine what follows. So I don't know, I can skip the details. Fortunately, Marcus' talks were before mine. So Kolmogorov complexity is the length of the shortest program. So the interpretation is the number of bits required to describe the rule. And I will also use this notation with the plus. And we know that it's uncomputable. What we need is conditional Kolmogorov complexity. Y given X, the length of the shortest program that generates Y from the input X. And this is something that appeared in Marcus' talk in a slight different version. K of Y given X star is the length of the shortest program that generates Y from X star, which means the shortest compression X. So there's a subtle difference because X can be generated from X star, but not vice versa. It's slightly more information to give X star than to give X, which is equivalent to this extra term K of X that Marcus mentioned. The formulas get more nicely then, which is convenient. Yeah. So the algorithmic mutual information, it's just complexity of X plus complexity of Y minus the complexity of XY, which is just the number of bits saved when compressing XY jointly rather than compressing them independently. And as Marcus already mentioned, that these equivalences are really deep results, while in Shannon information theory, they are one-line proofs. Here, they are extremely difficult to understand.
Can you say again, so X star is the compressed version of X?
Yes.
But that itself can't be computed, or?
It can't be computed. You can't find the shortest compression algorithmically.
Unless you can proof results for it.
So you can just use it as an idealization of real things. Okay, so just visualization. So this and this pattern have the star in common. So the complexity of the star is the algorithmic mutual information that they share. We have the analogy to statistics that has been mentioned already. So if you replace the strings with random variables, then you can replace Kolmogorov complexity with Chen entropy, and you get basically the same equations. And now we state the following causal principle, motivated by all the remarks before. If two strings X and Y are algorithmically dependent, then one of those cases are true. So every algorithmic dependence is due to a causal relation, which is a kind of algorithmic version of Reichenbach's principle. And the distinction between the three cases would use conditional independences on more than two objects. And this is what I'm going to explain now. The relation to Solomonov's prior is quite nice. So if you can say that this conclusion implicitly can be, or that it can be justified via Solomonov's prior in the following way. So you can say, if a string X occurs with probability 2 to the power of minus k of X, then if the pair XY has been generated independently, we would assign the probability 2 to the power of minus k of X times 2 to the power of minus k of Y to it. On the other hand, if it has been generated by a joint process, it has this probability. So whenever the compression length of the pair is significantly lower than the sum of the compression length for independent compressions, then this indicates the generation in a joint process. And the conditional, just the mutual information quantifies in this sense the evidence for joint generation. Okay, but so far it's just about usual, just about dependences, no notion of conditional dependence. We will need that as well. So you can define this in the same way as for Shannon entropy and define conditional independence. X, Y are independent given Z whenever the mutual information of X, Y given Z star vanishes. Now you can ask why Z star, just because things get nicer. There's not really a philosophical or conceptual argument for that, as far as I know. And then one can show that there's also three equivalent Markov conditions in strong analogy to the statistical case. So we have the local Markov condition of Xj independent of its non-descendants, given its parents, and the global Markov condition stating that deseparation implies conditional independence. And what has been the factorization of probabilities before turns into a sum of Kolmogorov complexities. So the complexity of the joint object is just given as the sum of the complexities of every object given its parents' objects. Here we need the star to get it in such a nice form. Otherwise, you have algorithmic terms instead. Can we justify that these are really assumptions, that these are really assumptions that connect causality to observations? I mean, just the pure analogy to the statistics, although it's fascinating, doesn't justify that we should really postulate that. And here is a justification that we called algorithmic model of causality, which also resembles Pearl's justification for the statistical Markov condition. The idea is we have n causally related strings, and then we assume that every string is computed from its parents and an unobserved noise object, so to speak, by a Turing machine. And then we assume that all these noise objects are algorithmically independent. One can say that each noise string describes the causal mechanism, so the program generating an effect from its causes. And then one can show that, no, okay, so let's consider a justification for this. Maybe the philosophical idea behind it. So the Church-Turing-Deutsch principle, at least, I think it always changes depending on who cites it. That's at least the version I found, that every physical process can be simulated on a Turing machine. I don't know whether this is usual to call it Church-Turing-Deutsch principle, but I found it this way. And so the algorithmic model of causality can be in some way be a causal extension of that, in the sense that it's the belief that every distributed process can be simulated by multiple Turing machines whose communication structure resembles the underlying causal structure. So with the same locality and causal structure. And then one can show that the algorithmic model of causality implies those algorithmic Markov conditions, which we found sufficient for postulating them. Just to show how it could work for a toy example, so let's say you see the following carpets and you want to infer which company copied the design from which one. Then you observe, for instance, that the objects that A and B have in common are only the star, which occurs already in C. So this is a notion of conditional independence in a quite general sense, that the information that A and B have in common already occurs in C. So regardless of how you really define information, the example suggests that there's a quite general understanding of what conditional independence means. And then this would be a valid hypothesis. However, of course, we have the big issue of uncomputability. How do we deal with it? First, one can use the algorithmic Markov condition only as foundation for new statistical inference rules. And I will briefly explain that later in this talk. And second, one could approximate K by existing compression schemes. For instance, one of our students did experiments with Lempel-Sif compression, some nice toy experiments that were successful with causal relation between some abstracts of abstract of a paper that developed, and the causal chain were reproduced correctly. Okay, but this is one approach, but now we want to shift the paradigm a bit and ask, rather than complaining about the fact that all real compression schemes are only very bad approximations of K, we could ask, maybe the real compression length is a nice information measure in its own right, that also defines a nice notion of independence, which in turn can be used for inferring causal relations. And this is a generalization of the Markov conditions that I'm going to talk about now. So it's a generalized notion of conditional independence that uses any information function. So what we call an information function satisfies the following criterions. You have just n abstract objects of whatever type. We have a function on the set of subsets into the positive real numbers. And we assume that it's submodular. This submodularity condition is well known in optimization theory. It intuitively says that if you add something to the larger set, it has a smaller impact than adding it to the smaller set. So giving $1 to a rich person increases the happiness less than giving it to a poor person. This is basically submodularity. And by just reordering the terms, you can show that this is necessary and sufficient to ensure that you can define conditional independence just by this sum and difference in analogy to Shen entropy and Kolmogorov complexity. So whatever this means, that it's a non-negative conditional independence measure. And one can show that the following generalized Markov conditions are equivalent. We have the local Markov condition, xj independent non-descendants given its parents. We have the global Markov condition with d separation implies independence. We have a sum rule which slightly differs from the other one, so it's a generalization that we need to get equivalence. So in this direction, it follows in the usual form. So the usual form would be that the entire complexity is just the entire information is just a sum of all conditional informations. But here you have to postulate that for every ancestral set A, it's basically every set of nodes that contains all its common causes in order to have causal sufficiency. So this is an extra condition that you need to go also the other way around. So it's nice that we have this mathematical analogy again, but the same question as I was asking before for Kolmogorov complexity, just the pure mathematical analogy does not justify that we should believe that these conditions have anything to do with causal semantics. Okay, now we recall again the justifications that we had in the algorithmic setting and in the statistical setting and try to just copy that. And we introduced a generalized functional model. So every object contains only information from its parents and an unobserved noise object, which formally in this language just means that the information of the node, its parents, and the unobserved noise object is the same as is already contained in the parents and the noise object. So if you replace that with Shen entropy, it is just equivalent to saying that this is a deterministic function of the parents and the noise. And then you have the independence of the noise term, which was just a matter of definition because everything else you wouldn't call noise. And then one can show that this the theorem that the following conditions are sufficient for x1 to xn being Markovian. To give you some examples, example that could be quite relevant for applications, the number of different words of a text. So this bag of words is used quite often in machine learning. So, and the functional model in which the causal Markov conditions would follow is the following, that an author takes words from parent texts and from an independent source. This independent source could be the words he or she has in his mind, your mind. And okay, so this could be quite relevant. Then we have the Lempel-Sif compression length, which is approximately submodular in a quite well-defined sense, which is justified in a causal model where you concatenate substrings from parents and from the noise. Then you have the logarithm of the least common multiple of a set of natural numbers. This is also submodular. And this amounts to the log of the period length of periodic signals if you linearly combine different periodic signals. So you could think of a causal model where periodic signals obtained are obtained by linear combination of parents and noise signals. And then you can also apply this generalized causal Markov condition.
Excuse me?
Yeah?
What do you mean by approximately submodular?
What the approximately means?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, don't ask me. It's, I haven't shown it myself. There's just one well-defined offset that disturbs this submodularity, but you can bound it by something reasonable. This I can tell you. It's already 8 years ago. I can look it up. Yeah.
Is that first point what's sometimes called the vector model of meaning? Is that where you associate the number of each of a fiducial set of words to describe a document, or is it something else?
Yeah. So the number of, maybe you would just ignore insignificant words and just take some words with meaning and then count them. And I think this is how people also represent text as a vector when they try to find some semantical overlaps that they analyze which bag of words occur together or something like that. I can't tell you any details.
Like a similarity metric between, for example, text.
Yeah. Why are these words? Yeah. So it's so this similarity, what I'm saying is that this measure of similarity doesn't seem to be far away from what people are doing anyway when they analyze similarity of text. But there's just this interpretation of submodular functions with natural implication of conditional independence. One side remark where I'm not sure to what extent it's relevant, but just realized that a submodularity of information plays a role in information causality in the context of general probabilistic theory. So just because I read the book of Giulio and Rob 3 weeks ago, in Howard's article and article of Pavlovsky and Scarani, you can find this submodularity condition of information, which is also true in quantum theory. However, the monotonicity of information that we need here is not satisfied in quantum theory. Therefore, I'm not sure whether this remark is relevant at all, but I just found it interesting that this property occurred there as well. So it's about causality and also something with submodularity. Okay, so they call it strong sub-additivity. I think in my community, submodularity is more common. Okay, but the second path that I wanted to show you. I said the two ways to deal with the uncomputability of algorithmic dependencies are the following: the approximation schemes and this generalized Markov conditions. But the second one is to derive new statistical inference principles from those insights. And I won't explain the details, but just the idea. And so the postulate reads, if you have a joint distribution, then you know already by the Markov condition that it factorizes according to the DAG. But then we postulate that those probability distributions are algorithmically independent. You can ask me now, what does it mean? What's the Kolmogorov complexity of a distribution? Shouldn't ask me now. I think we have specified it to some extent, at least in a way that you were happy with it, I think. But okay, I mean, of course, if you have probabilities, and usually you wouldn't necessarily assume that they are computable, but so you can ask, what does it mean if the probabilities are not computable? But let's assume that joint distribution is computable, and the way we...
The problem, right? I mean, you can easily say, you know, the shortest program which computes my probability distribution is just a function, right? You can ask for the shortest program which computes the function, and you call the length of this program the Kolmogorov complexity. The problem then, this is then completely incomputable because the equivalence of two programs is formally undecidable, and this breaks down some of the theorems in Kolmogorov complexity, which is sometimes relevant, sometimes not.
Yeah.
So, and you can fix that by asking for the shortest program, which is provably equivalent to your former specification. And then you get a notion which is sort of more closely related and the theorem still hold. I can't remember anymore whether this is relevant for you or not. But if it's not relevant, then it's rather easy, right?
I mean, the examples that we considered were always with probability distributions that have very good computability properties. So we didn't have this issue, and I will show you an example.
No, it's informal theorems.
It
is not, I mean, a string is the same as a natural number and other objects, but a function is a more complicated object.
Yeah.
In practice, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Regardless of the technicality, the definition, I can understand it. That's hard, but I understand the motivation behind it. So if I have a variable x that's a Poisson law, then that means that my variable y that's independent should not come from a Poisson law either, because it's already taken. Is that what it means?
Well, I wouldn't say not from a Poisson law, but not from one with the same parameters, because just the information that it's Poisson doesn't require a lot of information. So this is not considered significant, but the specifying the parameters is considered significant. And this is really a way we proceed with that. I can show you an example. So the idea is that it plays a role in our inference rules repeatedly, that nature chooses those mechanisms independently in some sense. It's also a philosophy that appears in Pearl's book. It's also a philosophy that justifies causal faithfulness. So it's kind of a generalized principle. Okay, that's what I was already explaining. Special case is the cause-effect pair. So we called it independence of cause and mechanism. So the distribution of the cause and the distribution of the effect given the cause are algorithmically independent, which means that the shortest description of the joint distribution is given by separate descriptions of P of cause and P of effect given cause. And my favorite example is the following. Let X be a binary and Y be real valued. and assume y is Gaussian and x equal to 1 occurs above a certain threshold and x equal to 0 otherwise. Then you can easily guess that y causing x is plausible because it's just a simple thresholding mechanism. So it's a machine that gets a real valued input, and whenever the input is above a certain threshold, the output is 1. And the input is Gaussian, which is also a nice assumption. So we have a simple process for that one. If you look, on the other hand, the hypothesis x causing y, then first of all, you see that it requires a quite strange mechanism, because p of y given x equal to 0 is this distribution, and p of y x equal to 1 is that one. So you would think of a machine that gets a binary input and produces a real valued output with those weird distributions. But so just by a simple Occam's razor reasoning, you would prefer y causing x. But we believe that there's also a deeper argument against x causing y. And this is the fine-tuning argument. And not only p of y given x itself is strange, but also what happens if we change the input distribution p of x, then the output distribution would look this way. So it seems as if somebody had chosen the input distribution in such a way that it produces a Gaussian. So which means that the input distribution and the conditional, the mechanism, are fine-tuned against each other. And if you phrase it in terms of an algorithmic information theory, then you could say, knowing p of y given x, there's a short description of p of x, namely, just say the unique distribution for which the output distribution is Gaussian. So therefore, our principle rejects this causal hypothesis. And we believe that this way of reasoning, so this asymmetry between cause and effect is related to usual asymmetries between past and future, according to the second law. So everybody agrees that photographic images show the past and not the future. And if you look at the following scattering process, let's say you have an object with some sophistication, and you have a particle beam. Let's, for simplicity, assume that it's a beam of parallel particles. Then the outgoing particles would contain some information about the object, but the incoming particles didn't. Of course, you can reverse the entire scenario by hand designing an incoming beam in such a way that the outgoing beam is just a beam of parallel particles. But this is just the usual asymmetry between past and future, that the particles before they meet the object, they don't contain information about, but afterwards they do. And this, of course, related to any energy can be converted into heat, but not vice versa, although the underlying microphysical laws are symmetric under time inversion. And why we believe that both principles are very close together, the following reason. We phrased the following independence of mechanisms as a common principle. If S is the initial state of a physical system and M a map describing the effect of applying the system to dynamics for some fixed time, then S and M are algorithmically independent, which means that knowing the state does not enable a shorter description of the mechanism and vice versa. And because we consider P of cause as an input and P of effect given cause as a mechanism, would just say that this independence is a special case of that one. And remarkably, this independence reproduces in some toy sense, at least, the thermodynamic error of time, because if you assume that M is bijective, then you can easily show that applying M to S cannot generate a string with a shorter description than the original string, just because M inverse of S prime is a description of S. So, yeah.
So this also applies if the initial state is very complex, right?
Yes.
This has large K of S.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond this usual reasoning. Oh,
yeah, 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 exactly. That's a good point. Thanks. Yeah. So you can see some arguments, for instance, in Schoeck's paper about the error of time, where something like this argument is made, but one starts with a simple state, and we don't need to assume that. So when you start with a complex state, you just stay in a complex state. And if you believe that Kolmogorov complexity formalizes physical entropy, according, for instance, to Bennett and Schoeck, then it says that physical entropy can't decrease in such a bijective mapping. So the conclusions. Causal Markov condition holds for any submodular information measure that fits to the underlying causal mechanisms. So this is an important condition that you shouldn't forget. So you can't just introduce any information function and believe that nature respects the Markov condition with respect to that one. You have to check what the causal mechanisms are, whether they are in the corresponding class. Not only statistical, but also algorithmic independences reveal causal information. And we believe that the algorithmic independence of P of cause and P of effect given cause is part of a general principle of independent of mechanisms. And this principle explains an asymmetry between cause and effect, analog to the asymmetry between past and future. So my question is causal inference a kind of thermodynamics? This is something that, just a statement that I like to make, that I think theoretical physics should care for about causality, and fortunately this has become popular more recently. Thank you for your attention. And these are the main papers. So most of the things are in our book, yeah, but you don't need to buy it. You can download it. So. And the last thing is in a paper of New Journal of Physics.
So what is causation then under this picture? It's a joining of strings or
You mean in the generalized Markov condition?
Yeah.
Could be, yeah, yeah. That's if you go back to that slide. So if you take compression length, that's what you refer to, right?
Right, yeah.
Then the causal model would be you concatenate substrings from the parents and from the noise. So you also add some substrings just from your mind.
In the case where you're talking about mutual information between the probability distribution of the cause and the conditional effect given cause, so there you're not referring to just a cause of that effect, but the sort of the complete cause. Because if it was like a non-Markovian evolution,
yeah,
where there's a common cause of the
good
system
point, yeah,
and of the dynamical map,
yeah,
then expand some dependence there.
Yeah. So a nice point. So it really excludes also this point. So it doesn't, so complete is not supposed to mean that you exclude that one. So this is not excluded, but that one. And we are currently trying to develop methods for confounder detection that exactly use the fact that this would also create dependencies between X and Y. And I have some real data examples that suggest that it's at least not completely rubbish. I mean, you have to be very modest if you try to apply that to real data. And I did that, and yeah, with some goodwill, you could say it works.
So a few years back, you were telling me that the algorithmic causal discovery algorithms didn't seem to work very well on real data. But now you have this more general approach where you take other kinds of submodular functions like compression lengths and the numbers in a vector model of meaning. Do you have examples now of real data where these sorts of causal discovery algorithms now are work well?
I'm not sure which remark you refer to in the first place. I mean, to be honest, we never had algorithms that used algorithmic complexity directly.
Sure.
So also we didn't approximate it apart from this Lempel-Sif stuff.
So you were implementing it for that one?
Yeah, so that was our only experiment, but with regarding using compression length directly for causal inference.
And so the example of the abstracts?
So just a few more examples. So what our main application was basically to use this algorithmic independence of conditionals. And what we did is we made some justification of other inference rules that we had from this principle. And I can sketch it briefly if you want to see it. Or maybe that's not your question.
Maybe you can tell me about that later, but let me just ask a general question. In terms of applications, Mark Sutter gave the example by Celi Brassi's work where he take DNA of different species.
Yeah, that's very nice.
And looked at distance measures based on algorithmic information.
Yeah.
It seems to me that would be a natural kind of thing to think about causal structure, right? So certain species have changed, but you know, to some approximation, there are species that haven't changed much, and they're the sort of common ancestor of other species.
Yeah.
So you could expect to run this kind of algorithm and recover tree of life as a causal structure.
Yes, that would be a nice experiment to do. We didn't address it yet just because of many other projects, but we are aware of the fact that this would be nice to do. What one of our students tried was also dependencies between languages. We had small collaboration with linguists, but at that point we didn't get reasonable results yet. So maybe that just needs more work. So it seems to me that most of these projects require a lot of work, and probably these people have worked hard on it. So what we were focusing on was this cause-effect problem, just infer the causal direction for just two variables, where we created this database and tried some of our algorithms and came above just chance level significantly in the sense of a formal significance. But you can always ask how many algorithms did you try beforehand, so
right,
then you
right,
can
right.
Challenge significance. Yeah.
Can you
Can you please repeat the argument about arrow of time in this?
Yeah.
With the beams going to the star, I think that was a nice example. The beam didn't contain any information at the beginning, then it interacts with the star, and it contains information about the star.
Yeah.
But why not the converse, and how do you link this with your previous slides?
The converse is, of course, possible, but our experience says that it does not happen unless you tune the beam beforehand. And then we would say this violates our notion of an initial state. So once it is tuned, it's no longer considered an initial state. So of course there's this kind of...
Because of this initial state S has to be independent of M is the mechanism, right?
Yeah,
And the mechanism would be like the scatter.
Exactly, the star is the mechanism in this example.
Okay, and S would be the way the beam is getting to the star.
Yeah.
If it's getting with parallel, it contains no information itself, so it's... Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is it somehow related to the notion of convergence of information? Or so for example, if you have n things, right, and you start with the maximum entropy distribution, you can't infer the past from the current state that there is some convergence in your mechanism.
So you assume a non-bijective mechanism.
Right. But then, if you have mechanisms that are, the mechanisms themselves are not bijective.
Yeah.
But then the whole system, so for example, some Markov network is reversible or something. But then you have to kind of fine tune it if you have mechanisms that have this convergence.
Okay. Well, what's the question exactly?
If there is any. This direction of causes from causes to effects, if that is somehow related to the notion that on average, or all the mechanisms you can build, most of them will not be like reversible.
Not sure whether I can understand it completely. So. I'm not making a statement about the statistics of the possible M, but regardless of whether they are invertible or not, maybe one could put it this way. This is a principle that also holds if it's strongly non-bijective, because you still could consider, could observe such an asymmetry. And the entropy argument is the one you could use if it's bijective. And from the independence, you can, in some cases, derive statements about the entropy, how it develops typically. But this is a bit more involved. I'm not sure whether this really answers the question.
Another question. In the spirit of sort of planning all these analogies, have people considered analogies in algorithmic information theory to sufficient statistic and to the problem, which in statistics I would call sort of pooling the information of different observers? The second part of the question, I'm imagining like if Alice has a string A, Bob has a string B, and they can compute the complexity of some other string x given A, the complexity of x given B.
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to say, well, what's the complexity of x given A and B? Well, if they just added those two complexities, that might not capture the fact that perhaps some of their evidence is common. It's not really...
Yeah, and that depends on the causal structure.
It depends on the causal structure. Yeah. So in pooling type problems, the causal structure is important for whether you can just multiply probability distributions together. And it seems to me there should be a complete analog here where you tell me the structure that will tell me whether I can combine complexities in a straightforward way, or have to do something more complicated?
I haven't seen it that people do that yet.
Or what about sufficient statistics? That feels like a notion of compression. Like if
Komarovsky just
needs something about y, then x star, you know, might be, you know, the only part of x I need to make inferences about y.
Okay, this way. So you mean sufficient
x star is the same as the complexity of y given x, even though x star is short or something like that. It's not a compression of all of x. It's a compression of the part of x
of the relevant part
for y.
So it's a kind of sufficient statistics screens off the other parts from the original one by specifying what you exactly need. Now that makes sense. Yeah.
Sufficient statistics in algorithmic information theory is a set to which X belongs, and X is a typical element of that set.
Yeah.
But then you want some properties about that set, such as if I give you a description of the set itself, plus the serial number of X within the set, you have a complete description of X itself, obviously. But that description is optimal. It's the same length description, two-part code, will be as long as the shortest description for X. So like one smart way to give you X is to give you, I'll give you a set to which X belongs, and I'll give you its serial number. That's always
okay.
But this is as short a program as K of X could be, plus or minus a constant. So it captures like the idea of what is a good statistics for X.
Yeah, I mean, if you have such a scenario, just define the statistical properties of X and Y, for instance, then this is our sufficient statistics, which, yeah, captures the things that X and Y have in common. That's probably.
Right, but it's not how I think about it. I would think of a chain, like X, a Z, arrow X star, for example. No Y.
Okay.
And X star could be some sort of coarse grain of X. But the idea of it.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
X star has all the information about Z that X did. So there were parts of X I could throw away because they had no information about Z.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
X star is. Minimal sufficient statistic is one that throws away all that information. So I can imagine defining the same thing in terms of conditional algorithmic information.
I would also guess so. And I mean, a relation that also comes to my mind is this things with stochastic complexity, like in time series, you ask, what's the minimal amount of information you need to keep about the past in order to be able to optimally predict the future?
Right.
And this is what, I forgot his name, one famous guy of complexity, I think in the, with Santa Fe Institute of Complexity.
Crutchfield,
yeah, thanks, yeah. Crutchfield has defined these things, yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's thank Dominic again.
Thank you.